Good morning, ladies and gentlemen of the Chris Gallery. Welcome again. Well, after that little interlude, I'm quite fired up. And we're all ready to go. Labour is back, we're on our way. Listen, thank you very much. That might be the quote of the night. The objectives I had for this caucus lineup was to ensure that we had took the opportunity to start bringing some of the more recent arrivals, the fresher and newer talent, up, leavened by the experience that we also have in our caucus. Annette has agreed to take on the role of deputy for a year. That fits the plan that I have over the next 3 years, and the first year of that plan is that I maximise my time out and about in New Zealand talking to New Zealanders. So I will be in Parliament sometime, but I will maximise the time I have out and about, and I need to know I have a deputy back here with experience who can take charge of the helm and look after it while I'm out of the office, and someone with whom I have a good, close, trusting relationship and to keep me in contact with what's going on. I'm pleased to announce Grant Robertson has agreed to take on the finance role. Grant is one of the intellectual powerhouses of our caucus, and it's a portfolio that requires that. He will also be assisted by David Clark, equally an intellectual powerhouse, but a caucus member in his own right, of course, and they will make up a pretty formidable team. I'm confident about that. That's sort of by way of introduction the main things I wanted to point out, but happy to take any questions that you've got.
So is Annette a bridging deputy? You don't actually want her to be a deputy prime minister?
I want to, I've said that the allocations that I've made this time are in place for a year, guaranteed for a year, and I'm going to do a full formal review after that year. The deputy leader role will change. This is about making sure that we take the opportunity this far out from an election to develop the next generation of talent, to nurture them, and to give opportunities for people to take on some quite challenging roles, to be stretched, and that's what's going to happen. After that review, we'll see what we do with the lineup, but the aim is that at the end of next year, we put together our lineup that's going to take us into 2017.
There's been a lot of discussion about presenting a fresh face for Labour. Some may argue that Annette King is not a fresh face.
Annette King is very energetic and hugely competent. And she seldom watches TV3. But when you look at the fullness of the lineup, you look at the front bench and indeed the mid benches, you'll see that there are reasonably recent arrivals who have been given opportunities because I have confidence in their capabilities and their competencies, and I know they will be a good team.
Grant Robertson, you picked him with finance. He doesn't have a big finance background. Was that some consideration?
Well, we currently have a Minister of Finance whose degree is in English. We've had a previous finance minister whose degree has been in history. What you need is intellectual competence and capability, and Grant has that in spades.
Grant also backs the capital gains tax. Do you expect him to change his mind on that, given your views?
Well, we're having a review of all policies that is underway, and we'll make those decisions about it. I've made my position clear. I think the critical thing we will be doing is reviewing and revising our strategies going into the election for 2017, and we will have a winning campaign for 2017.
Why the decision to leave half your caucus
unranked? I think that was to get away from this thing about, you know, I'm only 22 and I'm not 21, and an artificial, I think, sense of competition. I think what is most important is that every caucus member, given their length of service here, has responsibilities or irresponsibility that they can make their own and shine and develop themselves in. I think the main thing to look at is how people perform with the responsibilities they've got. The ranking is far less important, and this is also about creating a culture where we're not competitive with each other, we're competitive with our opponents across the aisle.
The last four ranked MPs, it's like a repository for old leaders.
That's about actually offering some dignity to those who have served the party well in their leadership roles, that they are ranked. They have responsible portfolio allocations. They are crucial to the development process that we have. They are a bit of an anchor to the caucus. They will dispense their experience and their wisdom. They'll be performing in their own terms. They will be a very core group, and they are represented there as a matter of dignity for those who have served in a senior role in the party.
Did you consider Grant as a deputy?
I considered a range of people as deputy, and we now have a deputy, and that's the decision that's been taken.
People like Clayton Cosgrove and Sydney Rowling have been deputy quite demanding. Why is that?
Listen, not everybody can be on the front bench. They are unwrapped. They are part of that team of people who have responsibilities, important responsibilities, to help bring and get the party through and be part of a winning team over the next 3 years. So they have important responsibilities. That's the important thing that they've got to look to.
Do you have a signal to them, though, that they ought to now reconsider their futures as deputy?
Not at all. We want to grow our caucus numbers, not shrink them. So they are part of a caucus of 32. I'd like them, after 2013, to be part of a caucus of 54, if we can. Well, Kelvin, I think, is one of the ones I've identified as a potential star, or in fact a star right now. He put up a good fight for his seat, won his seat. He has a very good, solid set of values, good Labor values, taking on some difficult issues. He has a particular interest in campaigning hard on issues of sexual and domestic violence, which is one of the curses we suffer from. So he's got a responsibility, and he'll be there leading that fight from the front bench.
Your top three is quite Wellington-focused. Is that a worry, given representation perhaps in Auckland and other areas?
Well, yeah, I might live in Wellington. I spend most of my time out of Parliament, out of Wellington. That's what I do. And this is about, you know, talking to and listening to New Zealanders as we go through that reconnection exercise. I have no difficulties with that at all.
But we'll start to see that top three as being, you know, Beltway, Wellington-focused.
Well, the leadership of the party isn't just the three. It's the, you know, you've got a front bench there of 10, and you've got a total mid-bench package of 17, and a total caucus of 32. It's everybody working together. Everybody will be part of that.
In the Ngāi Mahuta at number 4, what has changed, I guess? Obviously, she's been coming up through the ranks, and she's been a long member of the Labour Party. But what's changed recently, apart from the leadership contest, to bump her up to number 4 in your eyes?
Well, Nanaia has proved herself both in the election campaign and winning extra Māori seats and being a good campaigner and a good coordinator. So she's come up. She'll lead our way in Māori development. She will also have a crucial role to play in preparing for the 2017 general election campaign.
Lewis Lawler, down for number 12, now unranked. Any particular reasoning behind it?
Listen, again, there's always going to be disappointments. Not everybody can be in those top slots. What I've tried to do is make sure that we start to develop the more recent arrivals. We've done that. Lewissa is still a valued member of the caucus. She's got some important responsibilities. She will put herself in those as well as I know she can. She's a great campaigner. She will develop her authority in the roles that she's got in the campaign she picks up.
Do you expect to see some MPs retiring over this term, perhaps with a rejuvenation like National did last year?
I haven't been talking to MPs about retirement. My ambition at this point is to grow the numbers in our caucus. If there are to be discussions about that and those issues, then they'll be held a little later on.
At the next election, would you like to stand in another seat?
Well, I haven't made any decisions about what I'll do in the next election. You'll notice that I haven't taken on any significant portfolios. I intend to act in a bit of a chairman of the board role for the next year or so. And as I go about campaigning, leading the conversation with New Zealanders, being part of that reconnection exercise, and I'll review that and consider that when I come up to the review in a year's time.
So you put Nanaia Mahuta, Calvin Davis, Carmel Sipulani, Paul Lucio all come up in the top 11. What message are you trying to give Pacifica and Māori voters from this reshuffle?
I think people can see that we value their contribution, and we value the work and the achievements they've made in the last election, and indeed before that. And this is about sending a signal that we need a front bench and a total mid-bench package that is as reflective and representative of New Zealand as possible, which is the undertaking I gave.
So do you think that in previous rankings and things, that's been misjudged?
Well, I haven't been looking at previous rankings. I've been working on my own, and I think this reflects what I wanted to achieve, which is a lineup that is as reflective and representative of New Zealand as possible. Well, we've got some pretty powerful women in very senior roles, taking up very senior responsibilities. Carmel Sepulani with social development, Annette King with health. We take seriously women's issues, and we've got a great team of senior Labour women now in senior responsibilities.
Just on another issue, what do you think? Do you think that Ian Rennie broke the No Surprises agreement in holding that press conference last week?
Listen, I've given up trying to explain to myself what on earth Ian Rennie thought he was doing. It was a complete failure of judgment, I think a dereliction of duty, which is why I've made the call that I have, that he should be stood aside pending an investigation into how on earth he came up with that decision.
If he broke that No Surprises agreement, is that enough for the government to sack him?
Well, I think there's enough there to raise very serious questions about his judgment in that role. His primary duty is to uphold the highest possible standards in the public service. He hasn't done it. His own actions demonstrate that he's not capable of doing that. That's got to be the question to be looked at. That's a matter now for the ministers, if they care to take any responsibility at all for it.
John Key said this morning that he's made some mistakes, but overall he's done a good job. Do you agree with that? Has he made other mistakes?
Well, it's nice that the Prime Minister has changed his position after considerable public debate about just how bad that judgment call was on Ian Rennie's part. He hasn't made other mistakes in the past, in my view. I'll just recall the events surrounding the Paula Rebstock inquiry into the alleged leaked INFAT report and how a senior public servant was frankly hung out to dry and was treated in an appalling way, and the State Service Commissioner, in my view, failed to do his job, which was to ensure that senior public servants dealt with properly and fairly.
Do you think we need some more high-level inquiry around this about what's going on at the State Services Commission?
I think the question that arises is whether the State Services Commission and perhaps other parts of the public service have been politicised under this government. That would be a very slippery, dangerous step to go down. People will reflect on that and people will form their own judgments.
Yeah, do you think there is a case here that Ian Rennie has done favours for the government down the years, and you know they're going to give him a free pass because he's helped them out before?
Well, I haven't got that far in my sort of view about it, and I don't make those judgments. What I do judge him on is what happened with those events recently over the Sarah issue and the complaints about sexual harassment. And I just cannot conceive of how you would ever think that allowing somebody about whom you've just decided has committed serious misconduct should be allowed to run a press conference. It's just beggars belief.
What about the situation with Andrew Kibblewhite? Do you think we need to find out more about why Andrew Kibblewhite was at that press conference?
Well, I'm curious to know why the head of the Department of Prime Minister and Cabinet would be at a farewell press conference for somebody about whom an allegation of serious misconduct has been upheld. I think there is a question about that.
Is that the Prime Minister's job? Because obviously Andrew Kibblewhite reports to him. There was this hack as well. Is that the Prime Minister's job to find out what was going on?
Well, he reports to the Prime Minister, and he is very much the Prime Minister's responsibility. The Prime Minister should be onto it.
Neither Rennie nor Kibblewhite are giving interviews. Do you think they should front up to us?
Well, I think the public are entitled, those who care about standards in the public service are entitled to an explanation. Now, if they choose not to front up publicly, at least then let there be some sort of investigation or inquiry. Let's have a senior lawyer or a senior retired judge conduct interviews and investigations and find out how that judgment call was made on both their parts, because I cannot find an explanation for it.
Do you think that inquiry needs to look at the role of Paula Bennett as well as the Minister for State Services? What she actually knew, she said she didn't know there was going to be a joint press conference, but the wording seems a bit vague. Does it need to look at her role as well?
Well, she is the Minister, and if the No Surprises policy is a meaningful policy, then we ought to know whether or not she was advised. If she did know, what she did to advise against it. If she didn't know, then why she didn't know.
Have you made any progress setting up your office yet? Will you be getting that discussion on?
I've got a full staff complement at the moment. I've been dealing with caucus issues at the moment. Still waiting to get my pictures hung on the wall. I'm sure when we get through the very important issues, we'll get on to other issues after that.
You mentioned on the weekend potential for wealth taxes instead of capital gains tax. What are you talking about there?
A general view I've simply raised is when we look at our tax system and the fairness of it, clearly there is an issue about broadening the tax base. That's part of the review that I think we need to conduct when we look at the policies we put up, including the capital gains tax. I have no further developed views about it apart from that, but clearly broadening the tax base is an issue that we have to examine.
How long might this review take and what form will it take?
Well, it'll be wee while. It's not top of the list at the moment because we've got other priorities, but I imagine throughout, in the early part of next year, the review will be well underway. It's not equally, it's not something we want to kind of hang around and leave to 2017. We do want to be clear about some of our main policy platforms far enough out from the election that we can talk to New Zealanders about it and get them to understand what we stand for. But that work is underway, and when we are ready to confirm or indicate how we've revised our view, then we will do so.
How will you judge the success of your spokesman in the next year?
We'll conduct that review. We'll look at achievements made. We'll look at issues raised. We'll look at impact on the government. So a range of factors will come into it. I'll be sitting down with all caucus members over the next couple of weeks, going through their portfolios, asking them to identify a couple of goals or objectives they want to achieve, and that'll form the basis of how we look at their performance in a year's time.
Will Labor support the tariff fighters legislation?
Well, I personally haven't had a chance to have a good look at it. It was released in the public arena yesterday. We were offered a briefing about it. We still haven't had that. We're still waiting for the case to be made about why the 48-hour warrant for surveillance should be in place, or why we should extend the suspending of passports for up to 3 years. There may well be a case for it. I don't know, but the case hasn't been made to us, so we're keen to see that information before we commit to the legislation.
Are you on the same page as David Shearer as this? Because he seems to be saying something slightly different
from you. Well, we're waiting for the government to give us the information they said they would in terms of a briefing explaining why they want the legislation. They said they would do that before they released it publicly. They've now released it publicly. We're still waiting. We've got, I guess, a day or so to go. I'm very sceptical about the rush with which they wish to pass it, but let's see what happens in the next day or so.
Why do you need the House going into urgency this week then, Ivor?
Well, let's see what the argument for it is. We've seen what the legislation is. We haven't seen the case either for urgency or for justifying the legislation.
Why do you need a senior whip, a junior whip and an assistant whip?
Both the senior whip and junior whip are on the front bench. There will be front bench meetings, and we can't have front bench meetings and not have a lieutenant in the House whipping the crew along. So there needs to be a third reserve who is there ready to perform that very important task. Otherwise, we'll have caucus members out of control.
But are your whips going to physically sit on the front bench? Or will they?
They'll be in the whips' chairs.
Yeah.
But when a front bench meeting is called, of course, they will be there. And we need somebody to look after our members in the House.
So previous Labour leaders, I think it's fair to say, have problems with caucus discipline. When people speaking when they shouldn't, is this three-whip system going to change that? Are you confident that you can bring everybody into line?
I haven't detected any problems so far, and I don't anticipate any from now.
It's only 6 days, though, to be fair. This is the long haul now, so how are you going to get this to change?
Yes, and I think now people have got a bit of certainty about their roles. We've got the next 3 weeks to get our feet under our respective tables and desks and get underway in the remaining part of the year. But I'm confident that the caucus now has a very clear understanding of what we want to achieve, where we have to go, where we need to be in 2017.
So, any idea who's
hit
their firearm
off? Well, I've got a list of suspects that's rapidly forming. It starts at the ninth floor of the Beehive, but we'll get out from there.
About someone from the staff of caucus.
No one from here would do a thing like that.
The timing's very convenient, though.
I know. I think we all just wanted to sun ourselves.
What number do you technically consider your front bench to go down to if your two whips will be sitting in the second row?
Well, the front bench, number 10 means that everybody but the whips are on the physical front bench. The whips are on the mid bench, and then 17 takes you down to the fullness of the mid bench. All right, thank you all. Thanks very much.
I'm going to